Well, good afternoon, everybody. It's good to be back here. It's been a while. Mr. Shaw tries to shield the Twin Cities Church from too much Scandahoovian exposure, you know. So try to hold that down to once a year. But it's good to be back. This is my home church, my mother church. So it's good to get back and see folks we've known for years. It's very sorry to hear about Mr. Owens, know him forever. What a gentleman, consummate gentleman. I always remember that. And like you said, very youthful forever. He didn't age, but great guy. And I remember playing basketball, I'd say now 30, 40 years ago with his boys, with Steve, Phil, and David. And fond memories. So fine family, and certainly our condolences to them, and wish them all the best. Always tough to lose a great, solid citizen like that. Let's see. Well, we had a wonderful feast. We were over in Llandudno, Wales, and Michelle was with us over there, so we had a representative, wonderful feast. Got a chance to, we went up with the Berries. I don't know how many know Ken and June Berry from Little Falls, but they're British. He's from the north, and she's from the south of Britain. And 10 years ago, we went with them, and we went to the north. They headed up at Grange on Sands at the time, so we got to tour there, that area, and got to meet some of his folks and friends. This time, we went to the south after Wales. So had a delightful time, came back, and the Queen Mary, too. We tell everybody we took them along so they could interpret. So did learn one new thing. Kids over there always got something new. Over here, over there, instead of calling them geezers, guys like me, they call them wrinklies. I love it. I said, oh, the wrinklies took us out on a hayride today. You know, wrinklies. So that's my new term. I'm no longer a geezer, I'm a wrinkly. So, kind of fun. Speaking of little guys, got to have a little wisdom from the little nippers. Little Bobby was spending a weekend with his grandmother after a particularly trying week in kindergarten. Now, you can remember that, what a transition time that is. You know, kindergarten, tough times. His grandmother decided to take him to the park on Saturday morning. It had been snowing all night, and everything was beautiful, kind of like we've had. It's been a beautiful winter. I mean, just seems like we had the basic foot kind of covered everything up, and then now we've had like a dusting every few days, kind of keep it fresh, kind of refreshing. So she took him out and showed him about, and Grandmother Mark, doesn't it look like an artist painted this scenery, Bobby? Did you know God painted this just for you? Well, Bobby said, yes, God did it, and he did it left-handed. Left-handed? This confused his grandmother a bit, and she asked, what makes you say that God did this with his left hand? He says, oh, he says, that's easy. He said, Bobby, we learned in Sunday school this last week that Jesus sits on his right hand. Kids know stuff. You always get that perspective. Speaking of perspective, just a couple of quick things about this sermon. Like Mr. Klein mentioned, it will be a split sermon. If you don't like the first half, you can split for the second half. It is going to be one of those sermons. I've got a lot of quotes. I'm going to really boogie, give you a fair number of scriptures, so, and I will paraphrase them, so you might want to just kind of hang in there for the trends and the feel of it, the impact of it, more so than a study. And you'll see as we get into it as why. Are you an end-time weatherman? Let's see. Come with me to End-Time Weather Central in Matthew 16. By the way, I'll be reading from the New International Version. Very nice, readable translation. Chapter 16, verse 1. The Pharisees and Sadducees came to Jesus and tested him by asking him to show them a sign from heaven. And he replied, when evening comes, you say, this will be fair weather, for the sky is red. And in the morning today it will be stormy, for the sky is red and overcast. You know how to interpret the appearance of the sky, but you cannot interpret the signs of the times. As Christ's era could read the physical weather map of the day, the sky. But they could not read the spiritual weather map, the news. Or as Christ put it, they couldn't read or better interpret the signs of the times and the road to Armageddon. How are your spiritual weather interpretive skills as spiritual meteorologists? Christ stated that we should, as Christians, all have them. Let's see what they are, how they work, and why it is important and even vital to be able to be an end-time spiritual weatherman. So Christ here stated plainly that we Christians are to be able to interpret the signs of the times. What does that mean? Well, if you go to Webster's or any of the others, you look up interpret, it means to clarify meaning by explanation. Now note, all explanations are not created equal. We understand that. And I cite none other than the master himself, Yogi Berra, of it ain't over till it's over, and when you come to a fork in the road, take it. As a case in point. Sometimes it's a little tough to interpret Mr. Berra and his sidekick. Okay. We must be able to interpret or clarify by explanation the signs of the times. But what signs? With all the Daniel 12:4 prophesied knowledge exploding around us today, and remember what Daniel said, it would be a time. And as you look at the news and you read reports, you find out that knowledge in recent years was doubling every couple years. I'm sure it's much less than that now with the internet. Excuse me. I think I'm going to transfer some stuff here. Hope I can find it when I need it. So we live in a time when information, we live in an age, you might say, of information overload. We all struggle with that. We walk around with the Library of Congress at our fingertips, the effervescent Wikipedia, etc. And yet, how do you sort it all out? I think we all suffer from that to a degree. How do we first choose the right key events and players and then interpret or clarify through explanation all these events we've seen around us and seemingly for decades now in greater frequency and duration and power? Well, the method's a relatively simple one in a sense. First, you observe, right? You watch. Luke 21:36, a memory scripture we've known for years. We're told when we first come in, watch and pray. The spiritual weather, we call the news. And so hopefully I become a news junkie. I wasn't a big news guy when I was younger, but you come into the church after a while and you start to realize the news is important for more than the sports and the weather. And so you kind of become a news junkie. At least I have been, and I know a few that have as well. Second, we are to compare. So in other words, you observe the news, you watch it, then you're to compare it. You look at it, these spiritual weather events, and you compare it to the prophetic framework that God has provided us to give us guidance. And then finally, we weigh or judge as to how important these events are in that framework. So pretty straightforward, pretty simple procedure or formula. Observe, compare, and weigh or judge. Now, to be able to work this formula, it takes a couple of vital spiritual tools or aids that God makes available. Let's see what they are. Turn over to Revelation 12, verse 17. This, of course, is the church chapter. And I'm just going to pick out this one verse. It says, then the dragon, or Satan, was enraged at the woman, or the church, and went off to make war against the rest of her offspring, those who obey the commandments of God and hold the testimony of Jesus. And these are some scriptures that we use to show that God's church is still a commandment-keeping church right on down through the end. It hasn't gone on and taken a hiatus. Okay, and the testimony of Jesus. We've just gone through the Kingdom of God seminars. We've got two more coming up next year. Testimony of Jesus, that's what he preached most often, right? Well, there's a little more to it than that. Let's turn over to Revelation 19:10. And as the Bible is wont to do, it interprets itself. Chapter 19, verse 10, it says, "At this I fell at his feet to worship him." This was an angel. "But he said to me, 'Do not do it, for I am a fellow servant with you and with your brothers who hold the testimony of Jesus.'" Aha, here we go. The testimony of Jesus is, for the testimony of Jesus is, the spirit of prophecy. The spirit of prophecy. Now, as prophecy here can mean, as it does throughout most of the New Testament, because there weren't really any prophets in that sense besides Jesus Christ, it usually means inspired preaching. But you notice the context here in the end times, in the book of Revelation, nestled right in the context of end time events. And you can see as you look at that word, because it has, when you look at the Greek, it has a little broader range of meaning. So it can mean inspired observing and interpreting, aka signs of the times, end time spiritual weather conditions, or to put it another way, explaining prophecy as it unfolds in its overall framework. Along with the Holy Spirit inspired spirit of prophecy is what we might call Daniel's legacy. In Daniel 12, verse 1, let's zip over there for a moment. Chapter 12, verse 1. "At that time, Michael, the great prince who protects your people, will arise, and there will be a time of distress such as not happened from the beginning of nations until then. But at that time, your people, everyone who is found written in the book, will be delivered." So we know this is the end time, and this, of course, is what Christ quoted. He quoted the prophet Daniel in this very time to indicate a unique period of time at the end of the age, unlike any other. Over to verse 8. "And I heard, but I did not understand. So I asked, 'My Lord, what will be the outcome of all of this?' And he replied, 'Go your way, Daniel, because the words are closed up and sealed until the time of the end. And many will be purified, made spotless and refined. But the wicked will continue to be wicked. And none of the wicked will understand, but those who are wise will understand." Here we see the power to understand the deep mysteries of end time prophecy, the testimony of Jesus, which is given to his servants, his brothers, is given to a very select group called the wise. And who are these very blessed ones? Well, Paul tells us. 1 Corinthians. Chapter 3, 1 Corinthians 2, verse 6. "We do, however, speak a message of wisdom among the mature, but not the wisdom of the age, or the rulers of this age, or who are coming to nothing. No, we speak of God's secret wisdom, a wisdom that he has hidden and that God destined for our glory before time began. And none of the rulers of this age understand it, for if they had, they would not have crucified the Lord of glory. However, it is written, 'No eye has seen, no ear has heard, and no mind has conceived what God has prepared for those who love him.' But God has revealed it to us by his Spirit, for the Spirit searches all things, even the deep things of God." What a powerful, powerful statement. Deep with insight. So deep calls it his secret wisdom. And we've been invited into that inner cadre, so to speak, to understand the very secrets of the universe and the secrets of God. That hidden wisdom the rest of the world doesn't understand. I don't think we oftentimes think about that. But what we've come to understand by contrast, he says, the great philosophers and leaders of all time have desired to know and don't have access. But we do. So that is part of this wisdom. So Daniel said the wise would understand, that we in the end time would understand these things through the spirit of prophecy. and the special wisdom that God has given His church and His people to comfort them and to guide them through the most incredible time in history. And I don't think there is anybody in the churches of God, the United and Extended Family of God, that doesn't realize we are there. We live in an age of scoffers, agnostics, trying to rid the cultural marketplace of God. Quote, I'd like to quote from the Jewish World Review, an article by Cal Thomas. He's a columnist, one of the widest circulated columnists in the United States. He's quite a religious individual, for those of you who maybe catch him once in a while. This article is called The God Gap. Just a quick quote. He says, there have been many gaps in modern politics. There is a gender gap. There's a generation gap. And now, there is the God gap, which is the gulf between people who take God's instructions seriously and those who don't. The God gap is growing wider. And I don't think that's any surprise to us, certainly. So observe, compare for a moment the prophecies of the end time, our time now, with any other period in history. Christ said that you couldn't, right? That's what Daniel just said, and he quoted Daniel. For it is to be unlike anything in history ever, according to Matthew 24:21. This is the time we've been called to observe and judge, to interpret Matthew 16 style, to see clearly, explain clearly that this age is not just another 2 Peter 3:3 manifesto. Turn over there quickly. 2 Peter 3. Verse 3. It says, first of all, you must understand that in the last days, scoffers will come, scoffing and following their own evil desires. And they will say, where is the coming He promised? For ever since our fathers died, everything goes on as it was since the beginning of creation. A.K.A. the Mayan calendar and the Hopi traditions and Nostradamus. Another Y2K a little over a week ago. But that could have a very important purpose, like lulling into a false sense of security, spiritually, and other things as well. But aren't these great events basically just matters of degree? More false Christs, wars, rumors of wars, famines, diseases? But of the same kind or type? Yes, in a sense. Indeed, Solomon did say what? Nothing new under the sun. But these events will be taken to such mind-blowing limits that what makes Matthew 24:21 unique is the absolute scale of it all. So why is all this spiritual weatherman business so important, so vital? There are probably many reasons, but I suggest two primary. First, our Ezekiel 3, repeated in chapter 33, watchman commission that Mr. Armstrong spoke about for decades, to warn the world of the end time Holocaust to come, a Holocaust unlike any other. Secondly, Romans 13, verse 11. Turn there. Romans 13, 11. And do this understanding the present time. He sets the stage. Unlike Matthew 16, where they couldn't understand the signs of the times, he says, Paul says this some 32, 33 years later. Do this understanding the present time. The hour has come. And of course, we know that all of the top apostles that preached and wrote letters in the New Testament, you can find examples of them expecting Christ's return imminently in their day. Now, they corrected that as time went on, but still, God allowed that. It's a very interesting subject. We'll talk about the psychology that God allows in, you know, His work and His family. So do this understanding the present time. The hour has come for you to wake up from your slumber, because our salvation is nearer now than when you first believed. And that is always true in every age, but never more so than today. Because time did go on for another 2,000 years, roughly. But it won't go on another 2,000. It won't go on 200. It may not go 20. With all this going for us, what specifically do we watch for? And how do we interpret or explain the events? Well, God lays out a whole litany of horrendous end-time events and key prophetic nations and players throughout the Bible, Old and New Testaments. Our job is to observe today's news as accurately as possible. As I mentioned, compare it to our prophetic framework, using the prophetic principles that He's given us, and then weigh or judge as to how important or significant they are, and telling us where we are in that prophetic framework. Then after giving it as an ongoing proof statement, and I can't emphasize that enough, as these things come to pass, they are a proof statement of hope and faith to encourage and to stabilize His people during this unique period of time. And we're going to need it. So they do serve that high purpose for the household of God. And then we are to share it as a warning with the rest of the family of mankind, all potential brothers, sisters. So what are the current year-end 2012 Matthew 16 signs of the times? And where do we accurately find them? Because none of us that I know of here, maybe there's one or two, are news people or journalists that go out and observe the events. We're dependent on what we get from the news sources. And of course, it's never been more immediate and just in time, or real time, as they say, in any time in history. To help organize the great prophetic framework God has given us, let's develop a simple checklist. God has given us 10 basic rules of life, right, to live by. Let's develop 10 basic prophetic checkpoints to watch by. Like the Ten Commandments, which are grouped in two broad categories of loving God and your neighbor, we're going to use three broad categories. The first will be the six, Revelation 6 seal causes and events. Second will be specific nations, and third will be specific individuals. So it kind of has a general to specific flow to it. Prophetic checkpoint number one, the great seal causes that have driven prophecy down through the ages. And they are primarily economics, the economy, and government and religious ideology. And we see that they're very closely related to prophetic checkpoint number two, specific seal activity that Christ lays out in Matthew 24 and the other Gospels as well as Revelation 6. And of course, those are the false prophets, wars, rumors of wars, famines, etc. Second broad category, the developing key prophetic nations or groups of nations. Checkpoint three, the beast power of 10, a.k.a. the King of the North Confederation. Checkpoint four, the Muslim Caliphate, a.k.a. the King of the South Confederation. Checkpoint five, modern physical Israel, that is USBC, etc. Checkpoint six, modern physical Judah, today's state of Israel. Checkpoint 7, the modern hordes of the East, or the ancient Gog and Magog group, the big three being China, India, and Russia. Checkpoint 8, modern spiritual Israel, the collective churches of God in his spiritual nation on earth. The final broad category, development of key prophetic leaders or teams of leaders. Checkpoint 9, the great Muslim caliph, a.k.a. the king of the south. Checkpoint 10, the beast and the false prophet. I could throw in the two witnesses, but I just ran out of commandments. Sorry. Anyway, they come on the scene so quickly for such a specific period of time. There's really not much you can do. I mean, that God's going to obviously reveal them at the right time. So it's really a different category. They would be the other great set of leaders that will impact the end time. So a summary observation on the great causes which drive spiritual prophecy. Spiritually, I should say, prophetic events. I might say at God's and Satan's behest. It's called the Golden Rule. First quoted, I guess, by Baron von Rothschild. He said, he, and this is a paraphrase, he who has the gold makes the rules. And it naturally weds government with big business and banking in an unholy alliance called fascism. Fascism was the economic governmental driver of World War II Nazi Germany and fascist Italy. The proto-beast power of Revelation 18. More on fascism later and its role in all this, but I think it's important to keep that in mind. Now, in selecting our sources from among the, highly corrupt, and I'm going to be pretty frank here today, the highly corrupt, politically correct mouthpieces we call the modern news media. Where do we look? Where do we turn for truth and accuracy? For an honest broker, reliable news sources outside of the Bible. After all, we can't be everywhere, as I mentioned. And we know that they are not all nearly created equal. In this most critical aspect of our observation, our watching, I think it's fair to say that political prejudice and bias has never in our lifetime been so blatant, so in your face. And this is not just a Church of God observation. There are many secular watchdogs who acknowledge the current state, unfair and unbalanced journalism. Those are supposedly the watchmen of the people, the classical fourth estate, according to Edmund Burke, the great political philosopher. Fourth estate of a democratic society that's supposed to protect the third estate, which is the people. Protect them from the first two estates, which are the government and the church. Interesting. So it's tough to find honest brokers of the news who report and analyze with an unbiased, call them as they see them, perspective, isn't it, in this day and age? But don't despair. There are a few. You might say secular Jeremiahs who have not bowed their knees to political Baal and to our modern work of Elijah, that's somewhat comforting. So with these caveats and provisos, I present my watch and observe sources, besides, of course, the church publications, which I'll use some of. They, of course, are a given. This gentleman I may have quoted last time, a couple times ago when I was here. We take his journal at the office, and we're a pretty conservative lot around Anderson Chemical Company. We get a number of news sources. And this just happens to be one of them. We've taken out 3-4 years. We actually have one of his books that was written back in the late 90s. His name is Gerald Salente. He produces a journal called The Trends Journal. I'm just going to quote a little bit. This is from the cover letter we get on a quarterly. This one is from the summer journal written at the end of July. So it's a few months old. He says, and he's been doing this for 32 years, about a generation. He says, in my 32 years of forecasting trends, never have I been more troubled about what's going on in the world today and where the future is heading. Okay, you read that and you say, so what? There are a lot of guys out there probably upset about things. Why should we listen to him? Well, if you go on his website, you can pull up what this man has done for 32 years. And I brought today a list of 40. I'm only going to read 10. And these are all cataloged and documented of the trends that he has forecast in the last, this only be about 10, 15, 20 years. The Great Recession to begin in 2007, January 2004, he predicted. The Panic of 2008, he did so in December 2007. And I'll just read the ones, I won't tell you for sake of time. The 87 October stock market crash. The coming Greatest Depression, 2008. The pre-9/11 warning. Yes, before 9/11, he was on the books. Economic 9/11, September 2008. The too big to fail trend. Forecast that back in 1998. And on it goes. Let's see. I had one other. The secessionist movements. Back in 2006. What is it? 25 states, 30 states. Now in the secessionist mode, led by Texas. They're shooting for a seventh flag. Thirty-two years this man has been doing it. So after taking his journal and other publications for some time, he's developed some credibility with me. If a man can do this and be on record, he must have a method for looking at the news. He calls himself a political atheist. I like the sound of that right off the bat. So I'm going to read a little bit more. I'll be quoting from him off and on, but not only him. So back to this newsletter. He says, 32 years of forecasting, I've never been more concerned. Okay, that takes on a little credibility. But what has me so concerned now is the confluence of crisis, the coming together, has reached critical mass. That's nuclear energy terminology, ready for an explosion. The danger zones are erupting simultaneously. The Euro crisis is front and center in this trends journal. We track its timeline and provide insights. This was back during, like I said, the end of the summer. Analysis and forecast that won't be found anywhere else. That sound familiar? The world financial markets are poised to crash. I'd like to skip now to the fall and just the cover letter again, not the actual journal. These are just summary notes to pick up the theme. Now, in fall, this was came out in October, so just a couple months ago. He says, for viable new systems to develop, and here we are, of course, as a nation, the greatest nation in the history of mankind, ready to go over another cliff. This isn't the first cliff we've been over. For viable new systems to develop and more responsive governments to take root, there must be a broad-based shift in human understanding, psychology, and consciousness. That sound familiar? You could substitute human spirit, character, and wisdom in there. And God says that as well. There needs to be a change in man. This guy sees things. I don't know what his religious background is. I believe he's Catholic. Salenti is Italian. I'm not certain of that. Before such a monumental shift can take place, basic questions have to be asked. What is it in human psychology or spirit that allows otherwise intelligent adults to elect and follow leaders whose policies and practices are in direct opposition to their own beliefs, desires, and best interests, and to then justify their support for them as rational? Well, we know. Satan and Romans 1. But that's the prevailing state of mind of the world over. From our Trends Journal catbird seat, we see ships of state on a collision course with the future. We are sounding the alarm. In other words, he's a secular Jeremiah. It's just what Jeremiah said. Sounding the alarm. To change the future, a new course must be taken immediately. He recognizes the crisis state that we are in. Do you get that on the network news? ABC, NBC, CBS, CNN, even Fox? It's the most conservative of them. He says, no. He says, a new course must be taken immediately. In times of crisis, there's no time for moderation. Last time I checked, the end times and Armageddon are pretty drastic. No time for moderation with God either. This guy understands things. He doesn't know the truth. I don't think he's called by any stretch of the imagination, but he can read the signs of the times. He says, this trends journal is a detailed and fact pack for a purpose. To see where we are heading requires in-depth knowledge of where we are and how we got here. There is no publication in the world that documents the here and now like the Trends Journal does. Of course, we could say, of course, the good news, and Mr. Armstrong said for years, the plain truth, a magazine of understanding. But here we have a secular source that seems to have, after 32 years, he seems to have a feel for what's going on in the world. And he doesn't sugarcoat it or wallpaper it with political platitudes. You don't have to guess how he feels and thinks. He said, the only one in the world that combines the immediacy of journalism and an in-depth analysis. He has surrounded himself, the Trends Journal is a combination of 25 to 30, I believe, PhDs, all specialists in all the major fields. And his forecast, he's hit every basic fundamental institution of society, whether you're talking political, military, economic, religious, philosophical, technological, on and on it goes, social trends. And they all have specialists and they're able to do that's the only way. It's very much, in that sense. And I'm not saying, this is in the Bible or anything. The guy's had a pretty good track record. So when you look for a news source, I would say this is a decent guy to look at. He's one, and this is not the only one. So it's quite a statement to say this is the only place. But he's got 32 years of almost eerie accuracy in projecting what has happened here in the end times to the world. Strange phenomenon. So spiritual weathermen and women, let's man our spiritual meteorological stations. Let's check out the spiritual sky. Grab your checklists and let's look out our spiritual weather window at the gathering spiritual storm to conjure Mr. Churchill of late 2012. It's about as late as you can get. What are we doing? I'll get started here. It's moving along. First spiritual weather checkpoint, the great seal causes that along with Satan's influence drive end-time prophecy, economics, government, and religious ideology. Quote again from Mr. Salente. It's called the Great Global Depression, phases 3 and 4. We talked about 1 and 2 earlier and you referenced back to them. He's going to give us some historical perspective. In an age when we live in historical reconstruction, the rewriting of our historical textbooks, it's hard to get fair and balanced perspective on history. He goes back and does a pretty good job. He says, the Great Depression of the 30s had its origins in unregulated Wall Street wanton speculation. Sound familiar? Before spiraling out to Europe and beyond. Similarly, the economic devastation of the late 2000s was sparked by a dangerously complex, inadequately regulated American-European financial system, dominated by the same banking syndicate that was behind the crash of 29. Asia and Latin America exist on the same financially codependent planet. You've heard of globalization. And what he's doing here in reference is the money that has been escaping out of the United States and in Europe had to go someplace. Well, it's gone to Asia and Latin America, what they're called the BRIC nations, B-R-I-C, stands for Brazil, Russia, India, China. Our codependent as the U.S. and Europe, regional trade, banking relationships, bets, derivatives, you've heard those terms, are irreversibly intertwined to the tune of over 1 quadrillion. We're just getting used to trillions. The exposure to this planet of all the economic derivatives that the big investment houses playing gambling casino, have exposed this planet's economic system are now to the tune of over 1 quadrillion, it is estimated. Nobody really knows the actual number because they can't get a value on these things. And so now all the major quadrants, you might say, of the world economic system, the big four, are involved. With the European American market sucked dry, Asia and Latin America will be the scene of the next two phases of global depression. The signposts to perdition are clear. The residential housing, commercial property markets of China and surrounding Asian countries are faltering. Growth is slowing down in an accelerated fashion everywhere. The Asian stock markets have given up most of the gains made since early 2012. What have you been hearing? China's been roaring along at 8 to 10%. Growth in their GDP. The big money that hightailed it to Latin America the past couple years is leaving, and unfortunately those nations won't be able to withstand the related financial volatility. So, basically the BRIC nations have become pretty shaky. A couple other quick quotes. And this one is, I don't know if I mentioned, the summer 2012. I have to give attribution here, we all do when we speak. We've got to be careful. We attribute everything that we quote. Just a quick quote here, page 27. This is the summer again, Trends Journal. More than $800 trillion in securities and loans are linked to the LIBOR. LIBOR is the London index, rate index. And there's a whole scandal involved with that. But that's 800, that's just out of London. That's almost a quadrillion right there. And finally, he ends that summer session by saying, they're asking, the future, only the names change, but the characters are the same. Remember I quoted that earlier. He said it's the same group that triggered the 29. He said, these are the two-bit freaks who devise economic programs, promote national policies that rob from the poor to enrich the rich. By bailing out banks, rescuing financial firms, squandering trillions in stimulus money to fatten up the too big to fails while leaving nothing to trickle down to the too small to saves. How do you really feel, Mr. Salente? Well, you're not the only one. Where's the future heading? If the political gang leaders and the financial mob bosses have their way, you don't have to be a trend forecaster to figure it out. More death, more destruction, more pain, suffering from fear-mongering, money-junkie, power-hungry, sociopaths, and psychopaths sapping the joy out of life. Overstated? Go back to Matthew 23. Christ had a round with the Pharisees and Sadducees that sounded very similar to this. Matthew 23, I'm just going to quote one. You can read the whole chapter. It's chapter on the woes. And he gives a harangue on them, the likes of which you don't see in the rest of the Bible. I'm just going to quote one because it kind of is in the financial area where we are here. Chapter 23, verse 23, he says, woe. And that word in the Greek has a very powerful connotation. It is a loathsome type of term. He says, woe to you teachers of the law and Pharisees, you hypocrites. You give a tenth of your spices and you give a tenth of your mint, dill, and cumin, but you neglected the more important matters of the law that make the financial system, you might say, really work, justice, mercy, and faithfulness. You should have practiced the latter without neglecting the former. And he goes through there. There are seven of them. And he just tears them apart. Kind of like Salenti just did. You can read Matthew 11:20, where he said, "Woe to you, Bethsaida and Chorazin, Sodom and Gomorrah and Sidon and Tyre will rise in the resurrection, condemn this generation." And then you go to Jeremiah 3 and Ezekiel 16:44, and it talks about the fact that Israel is worse than the Gentiles, who he just quoted in Matthew 11, Sodom and Gomorrah. He says Israel's worse than they are, and the Jews are worse than the Israelites. That's where we've come to today. That's the prophecies we're dealing with in the end times, in the state of national character of our ethnic brothers. We see the economic governmental connection, and now today, late 2012, how it is finally, after 6,000 years of greed and corruption, driven humanity to the Matthew 24:21 precipice of world bankruptcy and genocide. Suicide is up all over the world. They say now the soldiers coming home, the suicides have now exceeded the deaths from other causes. Economics, and our second weather point, the resulting seal activity of the false prophets, wars, famines, disease, etc., fall right into line in James 4, verses 1 through 3. And you know it by heart, but I read you many times. The causes of wars, the greatest calamity of mankind down through history. We punctuate our history with what? The period of time between wars. And what is war? It is hell, to quote a great historian. War is hell. It's the worst thing that can happen, the most destructive thing to mankind. And what does James say? Just what Salentius said. It's caused by greed and corruption. And we have that in spades today, like no other time in history. Now the seals and... I'm going to take a break right there. That's about the hour mark. We started a little late, but that'd be a good case to plan. I'll pick it up there in a minute. Let's have a song, and then we'll get back after it. Give your brains a few minutes to relax here. It's pretty intense stuff.